when life gives you questions, which get answers.
Welcome to the Which Money Podcast, your weekly hit of money news and personal finance hacks to help make you better off. I'm your host, Lucia Ariano, and here's what's coming up this week.
Our figures show there are now 26 constituencies around the country without a single branch left, and another 53 down to their last outlet.
About 86% of customers now use one form of remote banking. There's telephone banking, there's digital telephone banking, that's digital app, and there's online banking.
This week on the podcast, we're looking at high street bank branches, or rather the disappearing bank branches. Now, our listeners will remember us following this story over the years, because since 2015, thousands of bank branches have closed, leaving some areas with no access to any kind of bank at all. So where are we at now? How serious is the problem in 2024? And is there anything being done about it? And what can we do if we're left without one? Well, to bring us up to speed on all of this and plenty more, I'm very pleased to say I'm joined by Which Money data journalist Josh Wilson and Peter Tyler, Director of Personal Banking from UK Finance, which represents the UK banking industry. Hello, both of you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Well, shall we start at the beginning then? Josh, first up, how serious is this problem now? How many bank branches have closed now to date?
Yeah, so this has been a real problem in the UK over the last few years. So we've been tracking branch closures across the country since 2015. And since that date, we've recorded almost 6,000 banks shutting their doors. That's 60% of the UK's primary banking network just completely gone. This has serious implications for local communities. Our figures show there are now 26 constituencies around the country without a single branch left, and another 53 down to their last outlet.
And how do banks compare? Are some banks closing more branches than others?
Well, yeah. So we've got Premier League sponsor Barclays, and I'm sure this is one table they don't want to top, but they've shut down almost 1,200 branches since 2015. That's the most of any individual bank. But honestly, most of the big high street names have pretty atrocious records over the last few years. For example, you've got the Lloyds Banking Group and the NatWest Banking Group, and both of those have shut down well over 1,000 branches each. None of the major players have particularly covered themselves in glory, but it is worth mentioning that Nationwide Building Society has only closed 2 branches last year, and they've also pledged not to close their last branch in any town that they have a presence until 2028.
Well, it's interesting, actually, that you mentioned Nationwide at the end there, because just today, our producer, Adrian, sent over an article about how the Advertising Standards Agency has just banned a Nationwide advert for misleading customers that the lender would not close branches like its rivals. Peter, what do you make of this?
Well, thank you, Lucia. I'm not going to comment on that particular article that you mentioned there. But what I would say is that, look, as Josh says, the trajectory over recent years has been for a significant number of branch closures. There's a reason for that. The way that we are banking is changing. Mm. More and more people are choosing to do their banking remotely, either online through digital app or by telephone, as well as other channels. And that is leading to banks to obviously consider the size of their banking footprints that can be sustainable. And it's clear from the information that we see from our members that not only are more and more transactions going online, and many of the major retail banks say over 90% now of their banking transactions are taking place online, but that's leading to a significant reduction in footfall in branches. So they're needing to reconsider that. But we recognise, and our members recognise, that digital banking is not for everyone, and that communities can be and will be affected by these branch closures. And that's why a couple of years ago, we put in place voluntary arrangements to make sure that any local community who lost their last branch in town could or would have an independent assessment done on the needs of that community, an independent assessment done by Link, the ATM operator. And if that assessment concluded that there are not sufficient alternative venues for customers to access cash, especially, then Link would direct a new company set up by the banks, Cash Access UK, to put alternative arrangements in place. And it's that new company, Cash Access UK, which is standing up the banking hubs, which I'm sure your listeners will be increasingly familiar with. About 44 are now live, 100 due to be in place by the end of the year. And you can expect more banking hubs to be recommended by the end of the year too.
Well, I do want to hear more about these alternatives, and we'll touch on it later on in the show. But just to go back to a point you made about a lack of footfall, I mean, is that the main reason that bank branches are closing, or are there some other kind of key reasons that you'd like to flag?
Well, another key reason is, you know, the banks are changing their mix of channels. So branch footprints will remain a part of the mix, but it'll be probably less branches, but more focus moving on the other channels that are there. So I mentioned, obviously, remote banking. And increasingly, you know, in fact, our figures for 2022 show that about 86% of customers now use one form of remote banking. There's telephone banking, there's digital telephone banking, that's digital app, and there's online banking. But there's also other channels. There's still, you know, you can contact your bank through the post for most banks. You can write to them that way. So there are other ways to make sure that you can contact your bank to do the services that you need. In fact, the main reason why the legislation was focused on access to cash is that depositing and withdrawing cash, by definition, has to be done face-to-face, unlike most other banking services, including the banking services you can access in the hub that go beyond access to cash. But pretty much all of these can be done through another channel rather than having to visit a bank branch. And increasingly, customers are just choosing the more efficient way to bank when they want to, in the way they want to.
Well, it's clear the landscape is completely changing. But Josh, how much of an issue is this then that banks are closing? Who's most affected?
Well, I mean, Peter does make a good point about footfall and the rise of digital banking, but it's also worth pointing out that cash is still the second most frequently used payment method, and there were still 6.4 billion payments made using cash in 2022. So, you know, we know that cash is still important for a large number of people, and in particular, we know that cash is a vital lifeline for the elderly, who are also more likely to visit bank branches in person. Now, closing down bank branches can seriously affect the elderly and vulnerable groups in particular, who are more likely to rely on the security and the physical access that a bank branch provides them, with more and more branches closing. And increasingly, we're seeing the best saving rates only available online. There's a real risk that these groups are being unfairly marginalised from the system.
Well, in a moment, we'll be back with plenty more on this, including what's happened to legislation to try and protect banks. Now, we've talked about the scale of the problem with thousands of bank branches closing up and down the country, but is anything being done to stop this? Josh, there's been talk of legislation. What's happened here?
So, yeah, following two long-standing campaigns by which last year we finally saw the Financial Services and Markets Act passed into law. As part of this law, banks and building societies that failed to provide free cash services within 3 miles of customers could now face fines. If a service such as a branch is withdrawn and replacement service is needed, this should be put in place before any closure takes place. This should mean that every local community should have access to some form of local in-person banking, such as a branch or a community banking hub.
And Peter, what's your view of this legislation? And, you know, what will stop there being a race not to be the last branch left in town?
Well, we support the legislation. We, you know, our members recognise the trajectory and, to Josh's earlier point, the importance of cash being made available. And, you know, the cash is here to stay. Whilst, you know, there is a downward trajectory, you know, we saw that 14% of all transactions in payment transactions in 2022 were cash. And we expect that to drop down to about 7% in about 10 years' time. In 10 years' time, cash will still be the fourth most popular payment mechanism. So it's here to stay. And it's, you know, it is used by significant numbers of certain customer cohorts to help manage their money. So we support the legislation. What that does, and supported by regulation, which is out for consultation at the moment by the Financial Conduct Authority, it will ensure that the designated institutions, and there'll be the major banks, but they're still to be confirmed, that they are on the hook for ensuring that reasonable access to cash is maintained right across the UK through a number of means. That could be ATMs, banking hubs, post offices, pop-up banks, whatever it is. There needs to be reasonable access to both personal and business customers. So the legislation underpins, actually builds on the voluntary industry arrangements that our members already put in place a couple of years ago, where, and I mentioned earlier, there's an independent assessment mechanism for a town that loses its last branch. And indeed, communities can make their own request for an independent assessment of their local community if they feel they have not got reasonable access to cash for their local community.
Well, we've touched on a few of these alternatives there. Can we unpack them a little more? Josh, how are they working? Can you kind of go into some more detail on these? And do we have any feedback from communities? You know, I suppose the question is, are they any good?
So there are a few different options that consumers can take advantage of. For example, customers of certain banks are able to use post office branches, which enable them to withdraw and deposit cash in their accounts and make balance queries. And most banks will also allow you to deposit checks to the post office. Unfortunately, there's also a long list of banking services which you generally can't access at a post office, such as money transfers, seeking advice, or opening a savings account. Now, community banking hubs are probably the most robust alternative. These hubs provide counter services. They're run by post office staff, but most major banks have signed up and their customers can carry out basic services such as deposits, withdrawals, and paying bills. But they also include private spaces where customers can speak to someone from their own bank for advice and support about more complex issues. The aim is to have representatives from different banks often available on different days of the week. But unfortunately, the rollout of banking hubs has been pretty slow so far. Just 35 out of proposed 120 have been opened. There are also a handful of cash deposit services around the country. These operate out of libraries and community centres, and they also offer basic banking services. There are also some banks who maintain fleets of so-called mobile banking vans, which travel around the country offering banking services, typically once a week in rural and semi-rural areas. But, you know, a lot of these options are less than ideal, and often they're not particularly convenient for customers and act more as a sticking plaster, really.
And Peter, is there anything that you'd add to that, you know, how these alternatives are actually working in practice?
Yeah, well, we're hearing, and I hear the point about the relatively the slow rollout of hubs. That is now accelerating. Cash Access UK, which is the company which owns and rolls out those hubs, has, you know, increased its resource, and it's certainly delivering to a faster pace now. I mentioned earlier, it's 44 hubs that are now open, and you can expect around 100 by the end of the year. So, and alongside that, the idea of the hub is that these will evolve, and they are proving popular from the information we're hearing. The two hubs that have been out there the longest, I understand, they're still growing their business. So as the general public becomes more familiar with what a hub can do for them, I think you will see them becoming increasingly popular. And indeed, we would expect the services within the hubs to evolve in response to consumer demand. So, you know, there is a baseline set of services, and Josh mentioned some of them there, especially the support you can get with a community banker, where a customer can make an appointment with a community banker from their bank and pretty much discuss anything. They can certainly do more than access and deposit cash. They can register a bereavement. They can evidence IDMV. They can apply for a power of attorney to be placed on the account, amongst a range of other services. And information, incidentally, on the hub services that are available is made not just on the participating banks' websites, but on CashAx UK's website as well. So I would encourage customers to have a look at that. You can find out where the nearest hub to you is, and also the services that can be accessed there.
That's super useful. We'll pop a link to that in the description of today's show. I imagine it must be quite a big change to get your head around, going from banking at your local branch to then using one of these hubs. What do they actually look like? Kind of where are they held? I'm kind of picturing one, you know, in a village hall or something. But I don't know. Is that what it's like, Peter?
No, they resemble very much like a bank branch. You go in, there is a counter there. It is operated by the post office. Just like going into a bank branch with a cashier behind a counter, you will find post office staff there, you know, to deal with the counter transactions. And then alongside that, you might well find an ATM there, and other machines inside. But there's, as Josh mentioned, there is a private room available to for have those private appointments with your community banker. The banks take it in turns. The large bank take it in turns. Say Bank A on Monday, Bank B on Tuesday, etc., to make themselves available. And you know, any customer of those banks can make an appointment and go in and sit down and have that private appointment and cover a whole range of banking needs. So it's very much similar to a bank branch. One of the challenges in terms of finding the right premises to set up a hub, you know, are the some of the restrictions around planning, etc., which we're trying to work with government actually to see what can be done to improve the speed of the rollout of these hubs.
And you mentioned ATMs there. I'm pleased you did, because while we're talking about cash, we can't not mention them or the lack of. Josh, ATMs have, of course, also been disappearing. Where are we at with ATMs now?
Yeah, so of course, it's not just bank branches. ATMs have also taken a bit of a pummeling over the last few years. Since August 2018, we've seen a 26% decline in the UK's ATM network. It gets even worse because this decline is more heavily weighted towards our free-to-use ATMs. So although we've overall lost around 1,500 pay-to-use ATMs, during the same period, we've lost well over 15,000 of our free-to-use ATMs. Another pretty hefty blow for the nation's access to cash.
Well, let's hear now. Let's bring in Craig Bowman. He's from the Federation of Small Businesses, which is campaigning for better
Loads
access
of small
to
shops
cash.
Tell us that at the end of the day, they cash up, they sort everything out, and then they go and visit a bank branch or a post office counter. And they're having to travel further and further. So if you're traveling at a tour with money, you don't particularly want to be travelling for miles and miles and trying desperately to find somewhere that's still open and able to take cash. So we found that one in four small businesses on the high street say that cash is still the number one payment method of their customers, but the overwhelming majority of them say they depend on their local bank branches. It's about 84%. So that's five in six. And they're being impacted as these branch closures take place. For the economy, we want to see people spending cash, and they do that because they have access to it. And so do small businesses as well. So withdrawing access to bank branches, withdrawing access also to the ATM infrastructure and post office counters will actually undermine the economy. You have a smaller economy as a result. We can't just leave it to the politicians, and we can't leave it to the law and to the FCA to make rules and UK Finance to work in the right direction. We all have power ourselves. So one thing we worked up with Which is a cash-friendly pledge. So for a small business who wants to retain their right to take cash and wants to attract the consumers who want to use cash, they can have a logo put up in the window of the business that signals to those people who want to use cash that they're the business to do it in. So it's actually using capitalism and the economy in the right direction. We shouldn't just leave these to people in parliament and government to make the right decisions. We all have some power in it ourselves as well.
You know, I really like this idea that small businesses can put up a sign in their window saying they still take cash. But Peter, do you think there would be much appetite for this from businesses? Are many small businesses still actually accepting cash?
Yes, they are. And we were really pleased that a couple of years ago that the government changed the legislation to allow access to cash without making a purchase, called cashback without purchase. That wasn't allowed legally until a couple of years ago. And what that new service allows retailers more readily to do is to make access to cash available to customers, especially those on low budgets. They don't want to spend anything by buying something in the shop to access cash. This new service allows them to do that. And it also encourages retailers to accept cash because it facilitates recycling cash out to customers. It's better for cash to be recycled around the local community than the cash to be go a long journey to be deposited or recycled that way. So we think mechanisms such as cashback without purchase is a really helpful device, and we know that more retailers are making that available across the country, which is great.
That's really interesting. I do remember being in a supermarket, and I think probably back then buying something and getting cashback. Are big retailers doing this? Is this something that is exclusive to big retailers? Are we seeing small businesses? Are there any kind of names that we can share for our listeners?
I wouldn't be able to play back any particular names, but you can still get cashback at, as you said, the major supermarkets and other major retailers who make it available. But it also, you'll still find, of course, free to use ATMs in a lot of the supermarkets and other retail areas as well. And one thing I would point out in terms of back to that point around free to use or pay to use ATMs, one of the important parts of the legislation was that reasonable access for personal customers has to be free to access. And that was deliberately put in, and we supported that actually to ensure for personal customers that there's reasonable free access to cash across the country.
So Peter, it's clear that there is still a need for cash. Is there anything that we haven't already mentioned that you'd like to add on what's being done to protect our access to it?
Yeah, well, increasingly, as I said, that the banking hubs are going to evolve, then that's not the only solution. There are other solutions out there as well, and some are being piloted. So new deposit mechanisms or capabilities are currently being piloted. And there's still some regulatory barriers to get through there, I think, to allow either self-serve deposit machines, either in the hubs or in other venues. But the banks are also considering other potential capabilities such as clearing each other's deposits, which isn't available now. So, you know, with reference back to the FSB and what the industry can do to help small business in terms of take cash and then deposit it, there are other capabilities being piloted at the moment. We'll expect to see those roll out in due course.
And just to end the show, can we bring it back to banking customers? Josh, how do you find out if a bank near you is going to close? And if that happens, is there anything you can actually do about it?
Yeah, so firstly, you can check our Which Bank Branch tracker, which will tell you how many branches in your local area have closed down, and if there are any scheduled closures in your area. If you're struggling to access banking services, you can also write to your local MP, your local council, pressuring local and national government to prioritise or continue prioritising free access to cash is a really vital part of this fight. And finally, perhaps most important, you can also go to Link's website. So Link, L-I-N-K, they run the UK's largest ATM network, but they also have a prominent role in protecting access to cash. You can go to their website and you can actually request an access to cash review, which I think Peter mentioned, for your local area. If you feel your local area doesn't offer adequate cash withdrawal and deposit services, you can ask Link to take a closer look at your area. They've got funding to work with communities to assess needs and provide new services where appropriate. They might recommend anything from a new ATM to a full-blown banking hub for your local area.
And Peter, then to end, is there any advice you have for people who might be worried about access to banking in their area?
Absolutely. Speak to your bank. That's the best place. They will help customers identify what the right options for them in their local area, especially if the branch is closing. That the bank has to work with their customers and does in terms of outlining what the alternative options are to bank. And as I mentioned earlier, there are an array of channels and a way of different many different ways of continuing to bank if you lose your local branch.
Well, it's been a super informative show today. We've covered a lot of ground, and I'm so pleased we've caught up on this ever-changing landscape. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Well, a huge thank you again to Peter and Josh for coming on the show today, and to you for listening to this week's episode of the Which Money podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please do hit subscribe to make sure you catch our new episodes as soon as they drop. For daily money news and advice, you can find us on social media at Which Money and online at which.co.uk/money. And we also have a free money newsletter, which is delivered to your inbox every Monday. To sign up, visit which.co.uk/money newsletter. This episode of the Which Money podcast was written by Mealy Chia-Ariado alongside Rob Lilly-Jones, produced by me and Adrian Bradley, and edited by James Rowe.